Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastoma Vidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So page 44. Okay. So this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Yatakalam means at various times such as the afternoon. Being surrounded by persons with controlled minds, he should constantly listen to topics of the Lord. This means he should not listen to other topics at that time. So he listens to that and not other things, right? You know, so point is there should be a time when he just sits, listen to his Krishna conscious topics in the association of those, what is the word used? Controlled minds, right? So in other words, those who are serious about devotional service, in their association, he should sit and listen to Krishna conscious topics, right? So it should be that it's a designated thing. Then like that, then there'll be that natural progress. Right? So Srila Prabhupada's very kind. He's already worked it into our program. Otherwise, we may not do it. And then if you can do other, that's there. Right?
All right. Yes. It's previously we mentioned that this should be worked in between the occupational duties and the ashram and the sadhana.
Yes, yes. Also, you can say on off days and other things like that.
Can we say that we might also come to a point that it's main thing?
Yes.
Not
yes.
Exactly manifesto, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, it can be. The point is the idea is that something is done. Let's just like some example in Pancharatra, that you have the Julan festival every year. The Julan festival is something you can actually do every day. But at least minimum, you should just do it for that, you know, once a year, you know. And so they have that. I think it's what is it? Ekadasi to Purnima. So generally 5 days there. So you know, generally you would do that as a full festival. But some temples, you know, only on the weekend, so 1 day, 2 days. But at least it's done. But otherwise, something like a swing festival. The Lord likes a swing festival, so it can be done every day. You know, some temples it comes out, and I think I'm not sure what temple it was in. Devotee was telling me they had this really, really far out thing. I think in the evening he would come out, sit on the swing for a while. You know, this is just before he goes to bed. He would sit on the swing, and then he would go on to this kind of like little train thing in front of the altar or something, or just in front of, you know, someplace. He'd get on the train, and they start pulling it slowly, slowly, slowly like this, you know, and the devotees are watching and all that and saying prayers or singing songs. And then suddenly just go, and be gone. Like that, you know. So I don't remember what temple it was, but it sounds like it was one of those places. It's small, everything's kind of sweet, everybody knows the deities. And, you know, kind of like in Jaipur, the Gopinath scene, you know, that kind of, you know, it's all the, you know. But it's just like you have these things that they can be done on a daily basis. But at least the minimum, then there's something. Does that make sense? So that's the idea: is that at least minimum, you're trying to do something every day. If you can increase that, that's always better. Just like Prabhupada says, 16 rounds minimum. You know, devotees take it. No, 16. That's the pukka thing. And once we fit, we don't do any more. In fact, it's maya. If you do any more, you can be like this, that kind of thing. But no, it's a minimum. So the idea is that we should be chanting 24/7. So how much you can add in, then that's good, you know. You know, especially, you know, how you say, just like Bhugarbha Goswami, just don't sleep. So then all night, you know, suddenly you just have from 9 at night to 3 in the morning, you just have kirtans and discussions and all that. And, you know, then that, yeah, if it works. But Madhvacharya used to play veena all night. He'd never sleep.
He's fine.
Yeah, I'm just saying. So the principle is that how much you can add in, it's fine. You know, but it shouldn't, in other words, it shouldn't detract from the economic element, family element, or like this, if there's an anxiety about it. Right? It shouldn't be that you're sitting there in the lecture and thinking about how you could be making money. Right? You know, so that's not ideal. Unless it's something standard, then of course, you know, you're there for, you know, a festival, Janmashtami, and so of course you're sitting there and thinking maybe you could be doing something else, but at least like eating or something, you know. But the idea is that as you're able to reduce the material attachments and needs, then naturally you just replace that with Krishna consciousness. That's the idea. Does that make sense? You know, and so that happens naturally anyway. Right? Because if one knows the philosophy, one's practicing properly, then one has gained whatever, you know, in reality, taste one can get. Right? Because there's a limit to what you can get. I mean, what's glorified and what's, you know, said that you can get, and what you get in reality is something totally different, you know. So once one understands that that's the way it is, one's performing the duties, whatever one gains, one is satisfied, and so therefore one can move on. So naturally one can do that. Does that make sense? So it's a good thing, yes. Okay, Srila Prabhupada adds, simply by hearing, by attending lectures in the different centers of the Krishna consciousness movement, where topics of Krishna from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are discussed, they will be purified of their sinful inclination for constant indulgence in illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, and gambling, which have all become prominent in modern days. So here then we see, as we're going for, that this is, when he says a grihasta, that doesn't even mean just devotees. That means anybody who's a grihasta should be exposing themselves to this. And in this way, slowly, slowly, then they'll start to be purified of their sinful inclination. And then by that, then they'll come to the position of Krishna consciousness. Right? So we see here is we're talking about people who are breaking the four regulative principles, and they're coming on a regular basis to hear. You know, they say at the Sunday program, they come for the Sunday program, or, you know, some whatever it is. And so then they're being purified. So he's saying Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. He's not saying some new agey kind of thing that you do and because you'll scare them away. Because, yes, you may not scare them away, but you won't purify them either. You know, and then by the nature, since they're not being purified, then where's the taste going to come in Krishna consciousness? And we know everything mundane moves on, so at some point they'll go somewhere else anyway, to a, you know, another yoga center, another this that gives a little bit more something. They have nicer incense, or, you know, there's more people, or, you know, you can wear your new leotards or something. You know, he's saying, you know, any, whatever it is, that's, right? Yeah. Another specific description here is Srinvan Bhagavato Bhikshnam Avataram Katamritam. It is not that because one has once finished Bhagavad Gita, he should not hear it again. The word Abhikshnam is very important. We should hear again and again. There is no question of stopping, even if one has read these topics many times, right? Like you mentioned, you noticed that a quote had come up again. There's so many of these quotes we hear again and again and again, but they're just applied in different areas and all that. He should go on reading again and again, because Bhagavat Katha, the words spoken by Krishna and spoken by Krishna's devotees about Krishna, are amritam, nectar. The more one drinks this amritam, the more he advances in his eternal life. Narad Muni continued, while working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, One who is actually learned should live in human society, unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. So that's the thing, as we were discussing in the morning, the balance that goes. One is not attached, but one appears as if one is very much attached. Not just, you know, okay, he's surviving, going to the... No, he's very much attached, so he very much appreciates these things. But he's not, because that encourages other people. Right? They feel inspired. Is this... Yes?
I was thinking, and it was mentioned previously, that it's quite difficult to do, because when you get into that mood, then you do become very attached and see the taste in there.
Yes. But the point is it's not... That's the advantage of the Vedic, is because you have... The Vedic tells all the different things you do. You know what I'm saying? So it... No. In other words, what it's saying is you go to, let's say, a social function. But at the social function, then one is going to just interact according to how one would, according to one's, you know, particular, you know, background and everything like that. But here what we're meaning is that because he's following the Vedic recommendations, then you always see the science. Right? It means you can become very good at it, but the point is you become very good at the science, so it'll always have that intellectual aspect. But because you're doing it right, then it will be very nice. You know, it's just like, let's say, for example, someone just naturally likes acting. So from a kid, they've always just done acting and spontaneously just do things in the house, make people laugh and this and that and so many things like that. But they'll be very involved in it because it's just something that they're naturally into. But let's say someone goes to acting school and learns, you know, very technically how to do all the things, how to do all the different aspects. Then they've gone through that, and so we go through a formalized education, then many times you see they can act very well, in fact, better than the other ones, because they know the technique, but at the same time as they can always explain to you the science that's going on, so they're not just carried away by it. Does that make sense? So that's why then when all those different things, like when we saw Priyavrata and his wife, we just say, oh, okay, nice. No, but that's the science. You know, Krishna and his queens, the different things like that, that's the science. So that's how it's also understood. Because you can see is that where there's the social functions, that's what he says, one should live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. So all these social things he's doing, and they have all that attached aspect to it. But when it comes to the duties, he does those exactly. Right? Just like Krishna, he's interacting with his wives and all that. You know, it's like when he leaves the palace, right, that, you know, he'll do all the formalities. But the last thing he does before leaving is then smile at the queens. Right? And so then because of that, then, you know, they were the last, then he goes out the door. Like that. You can also tell, kind of like, depending on the communities. Sometimes you have somebody who's Indian, I'm not sure where they're from. So all I have to do is watch as they leave. Because they'll leave from where you are, and then there's going to be a point at which they can't see you anymore. So a Bengali will always turn around and look at you before they go past that point. So if they look at you, you know they're Bengali. If they don't look, then you know they're from somewhere else. Yeah, very, very simple. Like that. So there's these kind of technical things. So we just, oh, okay, you know, just like the philosophy, oh, more philosophy, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. But we don't catch that these are the actual science. Because it was explaining how, I think it was with Priyavrata and his wife, it would get better and better and better. So what they're doing, that's the science. But at the same time, then you have like Krishna, is he's doing all those things. Wife is very attached, everything's like this and that. He's in bed, they're sleeping, and you know, like this. But at 3 in the morning, when the Brahma Muhurta starts, he just gets up from bed. Even though she wants him to stay, but because it's duty, and that's accepted, so therefore getting up for, you know, the Mangal Arati kind of thing is proper. Even though you'd rather not. But, so then they can also tell he's not attached. So that's the balance. There are symptoms, there are subtle symptoms that the one's not attached, but it's not by your behavior, it's by what is being done. But at the same time, by the interaction, it appears that one's attached. You understand? That's the science, that interactively one's attached, but what one does, you can tell someone would do that because of other reasons. That combination, that makes it very, very strong. Does that make sense? Because one is endeavoring to, the sense of possession is always there in the family life. So there's always that, if you don't, something that you don't have is what you have to have. So if there's symptoms that one's unattached, then there's always the endeavor to possess. And so you interact, so there's that satisfaction, that possession is there, but still there's that symptoms that one's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm thinking nowadays if emotions are not overflowing, that it's like nothing happens.
Yes, yes.
But what you explained just previously, it's all scientific.
Yes.
It's very refined, but it's not.
It means it's done, means in other words, you know where to emphasize and stuff like that. Let's say like somebody is telling you, just offhand, I mean, if you did this, it'd be better. And yeah, I'll think about it. Or yeah, I kind of do like that. And they'll go, okay, that's cool. Or, well, you know, like this. Then it works. But let's say someone's concerned. So they say, no, I think you should do this. And though, even though you're doing, if you just say, yeah, no, I'm doing that, then it's not dealing with the rasa that's there. Because for them, it's concern. You're looking at it that you're giving some advice, and yes, it's just technical. You know, it's, oh, yes, no, that's a very good idea, and I like that, but you're not doing, you know, like this, oh, yes, I'm sorry, I'll try, you know, you understand? Mm-hmm. So where it's needed, where the emotions are stronger, the response is stronger. Where it's lighter. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. You know, what you're talking about in the modern is something that's so simple, and they make it into something so big and grand, like that. Then you just pleasantly interact. You don't have to overdo it, but you're fully focused and attentive. So they don't feel that their overreaction has been wasted. You know how you say? They say, you know, they should not feel that it was crow food before Paramahamsa's. You know, like that. You know. Does that make sense? You know, so like that is it's. That's the thing, is understanding, that's what we mentioned before. If one actually is detached, then what's the problem in putting out the effort? Right? The reason we don't want to put out the effort is, oh, this is so much effort and it's so tiring and do I really have to do this? And so it's about ourselves. But if one's not attached, then there's nothing for yourself. So what's wrong with putting out that effort? No, but if it fits into the time in that, you know, it's how you say, Aunt Seltzer is, Aunt Elka is coming over, you know, so, you know, like that, really again, you know, like that, you know. Like that. One devotee was telling me had some friends, and their surname was Seltzer. And one of the ladies of the family was Elka. Elka Seltzer. Yeah, so it's, yeah. How do you live with stuff like that? Does that make sense? So that's the importance of duties, knowing duties and the science, because then one can perform that. So if one's attached, one will get the best results. If one's unattached, then you know what to do and you'll still get the best results. In fact, you'll get better results being unattached and performing it, you know, with focus and attention than when you're attached and doing it with attention. But if you do it without attention, or you know, just think, oh, this is. In other words, if science isn't inspiring, then it's a problem. And the Vedic thing, because the two are balanced, art and science. So the science is applied as the art. So you know the science, then you go to apply it. Then if it works well, then that art was well done. But if you find that there was some adjustment, then at the time you start adjusting until you find what works. And so there'll be, in general, you'll know how to deal, but then there's always individual situations situations and interactions. So it'll always require refinement. But you know what concept to work with. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, yeah. That's the idea, but it's mistaken by the modern, you know, the mode of passion, ignorant society, that, oh, it's dry, it's this and that. No, this is actually where social taste comes, because then you're dealing on swargiya rasa. But people are dealing is actually on partiva rasa, but they're trying to get to that, but they don't know the science. They want to get the effect of swargiya without knowing the science. So they don't act actually appropriate for the situation. But, you know, they were sincere, they were trying, so you should see it like that. That's great, but they don't necessarily see what you were doing was sincere and trying. You know, you're just, you know, dealing bad, you don't care, and this, and, yeah, so it's a mess. Yeah? Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments, certainly one requires some means of livelihood. And according to one's varna and ashram, this means of livelihood is prescribed in the shastras. Right? So when we say what duties everyone does, that's what maintains them. Brahmachari works under the direction of the spiritual master. That's what maintains him. He goes out, he works with the spiritual master, he's taken care of. You know, the vanaprastha is living very austere and that, very good host, takes care of people, gives advice. That's what maintains him. He goes out, he does whatever his occupation, but people come, give things, this and that. Does that make sense? Sannyasi is preaching and this and that, or he's not worried about it at all and just lying down. And whatever it is, then it'll always be taken care of. So grihastha, then that will be his ashram, but then according to his varna, then he has duties that will define how he is taken care of. Does that make sense? One should be satisfied with this. Therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee of the Lord tries to invent some ways to earn his livelihood. And then he does so. And when he does so, Krishna helps him. Right? So he tries to figure out how to maintain himself at just what is necessary. So if you want more, then you're going outside of what Krishna recommends. If you're just trying to get what you need, then Krishna helps. Earning one's livelihood, therefore, is not a problem. The real problem is how to get free from the bondage of birth, death, and old age. Right? That's the real point. So that's why training is for this. Because maintaining yourself, if it's just enough to get by, then it works fine. Right? It means if you're coming from an aristocratic family, it has plenty of money and this and that, then you simply learn what your father and other members of the family do, which will be easy. And then just do that. It's already set up. So naturally, then one will live at that lifestyle. Does that make sense? So it's just whatever, whatever works. Attaining this freedom and not inventing unnecessary necessities, unnecessary necessities, is the basic principle of Vedic civilization. Right. So. One's satisfied in that. Of course, one will say, "Oh, but then there won't be. Where will be the material advancement and things like that?" But the point is the Vedic culture, as we see, is very opulent. You know, both in religion, in economic development, in sense gratification, in liberation. It's opulent in all four. What can the modern offer? Because when it says... iPhone. Okay, but does everybody have one? It says Krishna came into Dwarka, like that, every home was decorated. So what does that mean? Everybody has opulence.
Wow.
was thinking that you were going to say everybody had eyes.
Yeah, but they all have iPhone 8s, you know. Yeah. So that's the thing, is one's satisfied in one's position, what comes naturally. So the modern would think, oh no, but this is just lazy, this is that, you get out and do more, but what does doing more do for you? What do you care if the other guy's doing more or not? But the point is, no, if he's out working hard, then everybody can work hard and then you can get more. So that's the whole thing, it's still self-centered. But here, because the self means the Atma, they're working on that platform. And because of that, Krishna helps, everybody has so much. You know, in other words, if you're only working for actual necessities, you'll have more than you need. And if you're working for unnecessary necessities, then you'll never have enough. You know, you can't, because as soon as you get something, you'll dream up a more unnecessary necessity. I say, each one more unnecessary than the last. You know? One should be satisfied with whatever means of life comes automatically, right? So according to guna and karma, what you're able to do, that's the lifestyle. This idea, oh, I could get more money if I did something else, then that's not good, right? It's just like, let us say, we'll try it if it works. Let's say you have like a village doctor, and that, you know, he comes to people's houses, he can go anytime to his place, he interacts nicely and all that. He's kind of like part of the scene, part of the family, right? Why? Because that's just what he does. Okay? Now, in the modern sense, then people see get more from that. So it's not necessarily those with a brahminical nature are going into medicine. Does that make sense? So then the point is that it becomes money. So in the modern context, when you think of doctor, what do you think of? Right, doctors, lawyers, you know, it's about the money.
It's expensive.
Yeah, it's very expensive. Basically speaking, if you don't have insurance, you can't actually take care of yourself nicely. You know, so that means somebody else is making money off the insurance because these guys are making money off the medicine. But actually, the whole thing doesn't cost that much at all. Does that make sense? So that's why if you're satisfied with whatever comes automatically. Like that. But then when we throw in prestige, this, that, those are unnecessary. Yeah? Okay. The modern materialistic civilization is just the opposite of the ideal civilization. Every day the so-called leaders of modern society invent something contributing to a cumbersome way of life that implicates people more and more in the cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease.
iPhones.
Yes. Narad Muni continued. An intelligent man in human society should make his own program of activities very simple. There are suggestions from his friends, children, parents, brothers, or anyone else. He should externally agree, saying, yes, that is all right. But internally, he should be determined not to create a cumbersome life in which the purpose of life will not be fulfilled. Right? They'll say so many things, and so then you live. So if they can all live together and nicely and all be Krishna conscious, then living together is better. But if for spiritual development and all that, one needs to live separately, then that's also sanctioned by the Veda. In other words, on the material platform, a family should stay together. But for spiritual purpose, if there's a need, if it will increase the spiritual benefit, then they separate. In other words, the Vedic has the nuclear family concept for the purpose of spiritual life. But if it's material life, then the joint family is always recommended. Does that make sense? So here it's that whatever works out, if you can do and this and that, they'll come up with so many ideas. Because a lot of times people just like to talk. So it's not even that they're really giving advice. They're just talking, and it's just something, oh, hey, you could do this and that, and like that. You know. The natural products created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be utilized to maintain the bodies and souls of all living entities. Right? So the whole point is natural was the original system. But before it was considered something less. In the 50s it was considered natural is not as good as man-made. And then the 60s they started to notice some problems with that, and then it slowly grew until I think in the 90s only it became kind of mainstream that natural is good. But then it's here and there, and now it's kind of more and more. But the point is it's because that's the modern thing to do. But actually, no, that's the Vedic thing to do. That's why it works. Because it was the Vedic thing to do. So, if one is into natural things and organic and that, great. But why? Because the modern says so? Or because the Vedic says so? So that's the point of the simple life. The simple life is that it's the Vedas say, you make your life like that, and things go along very nicely. Okay. The necessities of life are of three types. Those produced from the sky, from rainfall, from the earth, from the mines, the seas, or the fields, and from the atmosphere, that is that which is obtained suddenly and unexpectedly. I say, like how Wile E. Coyote gets things. Like, one may claim proprietorship. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. One should, so if you take more, then there'll always be a reaction. So in the beginning, it looks like it's good. That's the mode of passion. But with time, it won't be good. Right? One should treat animals such as deer, camels, asses, monkeys, mice, snakes, birds, and flies exactly like one's own son. How little difference that there actually is between children and these innocent animals. Srila Prabhupada comments. One who is in Krishna conscious understands that there's no difference between the animals and the innocent children in one's home. Even in ordinary life, it is our practical experience that a household dog or cat is regarded on the same level as one's children, without any envy. Like children, the unintelligent animals are also sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore a Krishna-conscious person, even though a householder, should not discriminate between children and poor animals. Unfortunately, modern society has devised many means for killing animals in different forms of life. For example, in the agricultural fields, there may be many mice, flies, and other creatures that disturb production, and sometimes they are killed by pesticides. In this verse, however, such killing is forbidden. Every living entity should be nourished by the food given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Human society should not consider itself the only enjoyer of all the properties of God. Rather, men should understand that all the other animals also have a claim to God's property. In this verse, even the snake is mentioned, indicating that a householder should not be envious even of a snake. If everyone is fully satisfied by eating food that is a gift from the Lord, why should there be envy between one living entity and another? Right. So if you're only working for how much you require, there'll always be extra. Does that make sense? Right? Also, if you work by the natural methods, because if you use the pesticides and that, it also kills all kinds of things. Not just the bugs you want, but the bugs you want to get, but also the bugs you don't want to get. So anything that's actually even beneficial becomes killed in the process. The artificial fertilizer, all these different artificial things, then it doesn't. Otherwise, plants, if they're growing in very good soil, bugs can't bother them so much. Does that make sense? So like that. And then you have others, they'll come along and eat something, birds will eat something, like that. But then, along with it, if there's more of these, then those who eat those guys, there'll be more of them also. So at different times, one will get a little bit more, but after it'll balance. There was a study done and practiced, I think it was in Kenya. Because you have different, you know, so many different countries in Africa, and they have lots of elephants. So most countries, they have a process when there's too many elephants, they go in and cull the elephants. Or, you know, cull the other animals, whatever it is. There's too many of them, they cull them, you know, quote unquote, for their own benefit. But they'd probably rather be a little bit skinny and not and a little hungry than dead. So, you know, what do they mean by that? So, but in Kenya, they're very strict. They will not cull the elephants. And they would show pictures, because every year they would take pictures of the environment. And they'll show, as the elephants grow, the environment naturally becomes less. And then naturally the elephants, just everything balances off, and then it all becomes opulent again. So it'll be in cycles. You know, so in cycles there'll be more mice, but then there'll be more cats. There'll be more, you know, this and that, you know. So it all just, does that make sense? So if the earth is strong, then there'll be, at least you'll get the best production, because she controls how much you get. Right? The point is one can't, that she can produce more. But she only produces according to your piety. That's what it says, Krishna takes care. So you'll get what you require. Does that make sense? Narad Muni continued, even if one is a householder rather than a brahmachari, a sannyasi or vanaprastha, one should not endeavor very hard for religiosity, economic development, or satisfaction of the senses. Even in household or life, one should be satisfied to maintain body and soul together with whatever is available with minimum endeavor. According to place and time, by the grace of the Lord. Oh, by the grace. Okay. One should be satisfied to maintain body and soul together with whatever is available with minimum endeavor according to place and time. Right, so you have your nature, so you have that, then according to the place and time, you're able to apply. Right? Does that make sense? But the main point in place is yourself. Because a place doesn't mean anything unless you can relate and work within it. So generally we take, oh, the environment's different and so I have to change. No, it's what can you do in this environment? That's the actual Vedic view of it. The modern is, oh, the environment's changed, I change. Rather than, no, what is your duty in this changed environment? You understand? It's a different. By the grace of the Lord, then by His. So we make our endeavor, the results come from Him. One should not engage oneself in ugra karma. Srila Prabhupada comments. Economic development is necessary for grihasthas. Brahmana grihasthas should be satisfied with the life of adhyayana, adhyapana, yajana, and yajana. Being learned scholars, teaching others to be scholars, learning how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, and also teaching others how to worship Lord Vishnu, or even the demigods. Right? So this is what he does. He studies, he teaches, he does puja, he teaches others how to worship. A brahmana should do this without remuneration, but he is allowed to accept charity from a person whom he teaches how to be a human being. As for kshatriyas, they are supposed to be kings of the land, and the land should be distributed to the vaishyas for agricultural activities, cow protection, and trade. Right. So, the technically speaking, in the Vedic state, all the land belongs to the state, but it's given to all the vaishyas to control. Right. As long as they use it properly, it's theirs. So it's not like, you know, you have 99 years or anything like this. It'll stay in the family, however, thousands of years, as long as you use it properly. But if it's ever misused, that only at that time may the state take it back. And then that would only be to give it to other qualified people who then would do properly agriculture and stuff. Does that make sense? So that's the, like that. Shudras must work. Sometimes they engage in occupational duties as cloth manufacturers, weavers, blacksmiths, goldsmiths, brasssmiths, and so on, or else they should engage in hard labor to produce food grains. These are the different occupational duties by which men should earn their livelihood. And in this way, because one would say, okay, the kings, then they distribute all the land. So how do they maintain themselves by that? They tax. So in other words, whatever is grown, depending upon how it goes, then if there's prosperity as a general thing, then they'll take 16.5%. And if there's some greater need in the government, they can take up to 25%. Right? So that's the thing. So they've distributed all, and agriculture is going on. Production of all these things are going on. He gets his taxes. And so that's how he maintains himself. These are the different occupational duties by which men should earn their livelihood. And in this way, human society should be simple. At the present moment, however, everyone is engaged in technological advancement, which is described in Bhagavad Gita as Ugra Karma, extremely severe endeavor. This Ugra Karma is the cause of agitation within the human mind. One's means of livelihood should be extremely simple. But the idea is it's direct. Somebody, you know, you grow something, you make that into fabric, that's made into, you sell the fabrics, other people, then they make that into things, sell that, you know, or people do a job of making things from the fabric and you hire them for that, or, you understand? It's very simple, it's very direct. But the technology, then the problem is it's very, very complicated. We see it as very simple and everything like that, but it's not. So much is involved. So because of that, that's why it's considered over-endeavor. That's why it's hard to maintain these industries. Like before, it's like you had basically a natural economy was going along, and then, you know, some natural disturbance may cause something, but that's also due to piety and piety like that. But now it's like the economy is always very, very volatile. You know, and not necessarily in a good way. Some people know how, of course, how to use volatility, but the problem is that it's not beneficial for everybody. This Ugra Karma is okay. One's means okay. As for those who are not grihasthas, the brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis, they don't have to do anything but strive for advancement in spiritual life. This means that 3/4 of the entire population should stop sense gratification and simply be engaged in advancement of Krishna consciousness. Only 1/4 of the population should be grihastha, and that should be according to the laws of restricted sense gratification. Right? So we could have a thing and somebody wants to get married, but oh, you have to wait 3 years because a spot has to open up because, you know, otherwise it 1/4 won't go out, you know, like that. You know?
Start preaching to the older ones. You should take vanaprastha.
Yeah. That, you know, Mahaprashtan is a great thing. Yeah, or go traveling, preaching, they leave the community, so then balance goes, okay. Okay, his spot opened up, okay, yeah. The grihasthas, vanaprasthas, brahmacharis, and sannyasis should endeavor together with their total energy to become Krishna conscious. This type of civilization is called Daiva Varnashrama. One of the objectives of the Krishna conscious movement is to establish this type of varnashram, though many have objections, but not to encourage so-called varnashram without scientifically organized endeavor by human society. So that's the thing, it has to be scientifically organized. Because the other day I heard someone make a point and say, oh, well, no, but society's already organized. Prabhupada said it's already organized like that, so therefore why do we have to organize it? But Prabhupada says, but not to encourage the so-called varnashram without scientifically organized endeavor. So that means it has to be based on the science. Like that. But we're only going to make the endeavor for it because for Daiva Varnashram. If there's others that want to work for ordinary varnashram, fine. Governments want to do it this and that. But our only interest is in Daiva Varnashram. So we're only teaching people these things, how to be Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? Yeah. Narad Muni continued, dogs, fallen persons, and untouchables, including chandalas, dog eaters, should all be maintained with their proper necessities. Because they all have their different positions in society and what they do. Right? Which should be contributed by the householders. Even one's wife at home, with whom one is most intimately attached, should be offered for the reception of guests and people in general. So as when guests come to the home, then the wife should be involved, and this, that, then it's a proper, you know, because otherwise the house is not a home unless there's, you know, the wife. So people are coming to your home, not to your house. So if the wife doesn't come, they only come to your house, not to the home. Is that what he says? If it's some business thing like that, yes, then there's the front part of the house where then the man goes out and things like that. But if it's a family affair, then that comes inside, then the women are involved and all that. Does that make sense? So that means, one, two things. Is one, the women can't be, oh, we don't want to get into that, you know, so that's such a trip and so many things like that. Or you don't want the other thing where the man is so jealous that if his wife interacts nicely with anybody else, he can't tolerate that. So it balances both aspects. So, make sense? Yeah. I say, because how you say, just in general. Now, you hear about in previous times how much of the time people would be visiting others and neighbors and hanging out. No, nowadays people don't do that so much, but much of that comes down to because the wife doesn't want to be involved. And because of modern architecture, the old architectures, you had the inside of the house, the outside of the house. So she could be on the inside of the house, and you could, host some people on the outside of the house. But now, because of the, the American concept where you have, the living room, and then everything's off the living room, that unless she wants to hide in the bedroom, you can't have anybody over. So if she wants to go to the bathroom, she wants to get something from the kitchen, or anything, she has to come out, and then that means she has to dress up, this, that. So because she doesn't like that, therefore no one comes over. And then you just give that so many years, and then with time you have no social function. And then people talk about community. Like I remember once I was explaining, there was a lady architect from, some Antioch country. And just to be clear. And I was explaining how you have to put the house like this, in Vastu and things like that. Or, she says, that's not nice. We want to be involved in everything. Why should there be a different part of the house and all things? I was showing him how you do the kitchen. It has two doors. You have the living room that's connected to the front door, and you have bathrooms that are connected there. But from the kitchen, you can go out into the other part of the house, but also from the other part, you can come into the kitchen. And you can, go into other bathrooms, unless, of course, you want to have many kitchens, which is fine also. But, when it gets like this. And so she says, no, women wouldn't want that. We want to be involved in everything. Why just the men should do everything? It's just like, yeah, right. It's that you don't want it to happen. It doesn't happen. It's not that it's going there and I want to be involved. It's that, no, it's only happening when I want it to happen. So, that's the... Okay. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments, although in modern society the dog is accepted as part of one's household paraphernalia, in the Vedic system of household life the dog is untouchable. As mentioned here, a dog may be maintained with proper food, but it cannot be allowed to enter one's house. What to speak of the bedroom? Outcasts or untouchable chandalas should also be provided with the necessities for life. The word used in this connection is yata. Like for the dog, they don't really care. As long as they get something to eat and there's some place to sleep. Like barn sleeping in the hay is great. No one's going to kick them out, this and that. You get on the bed, someone moves their feet, knock you off the bed. So it's not that great. So that's the point. They have their place outside. They're taken care of nicely. And so then, they're happy. And they do their dog stuff, right? The word used in this connection is yata, which means as much as deserved. Not as much as they desire, but how much is actually deserved. So that's the thing. Before people were trained, they knew how much to give. Like, it's always very interesting. How did that get there? How did that get onto that? It went off the page and onto the plastic. Very dangerous. You have the ladies who do cleaning stuff, right? So then, Diwali or different things, people want to give them something, right? So then, according to how much work they're doing, what's their relationship, their attitude, and all that, they'll be given something. So you go to the boundary wall, you find, you know, a nice cotton sari for, you know, 300 rupees or something like that, you give it to them. And they're happy as anything. But Westerlies say, oh, but that's this and that, you know, so they give them one of their silk saris. And then after that, then the screen lady expects she's going to get that kind of stuff and make that kind of money, and then she doesn't have to do the kind of work because she wears the same kind of sari as the lady in the house. And then they get ruined. And then now it's really hard to find a good cleaning lady. I mean, really hard. So that's what it means by how much is deserved. Because if you give more, they'll be ruined. Because it's more than their ego can deal with. One may say, oh, this is not right, this is not this and that, but that's reality. That's the whole point. Right? Does this make sense? So the whole point is it's according to what they deserve. If someone's like part of the family, does everything, takes care, spends more time, spends the whole day, takes care of the kids, that's one thing, then they will get something more. But if they just come in, clean for a couple hours and go away and you don't see them, then does that make sense? There's a distinction, there has to be. Otherwise, then you'll ruin the whole social fabric. The outcast should not be given money with which to indulge in more than they need, for otherwise they will misuse it, right? If they only get how much they need, they'll buy the necessities. If they get more, then they start buying alcohol and all this kind of stuff. That's what it means, is those who are cultured, they'll get more. Those who are not, they're given just exactly what they need. That way they'll maintain themselves. Because if you give them more, they'll actually end up with less. You know, like that example of... They did a study on lottery winners, big lottery winners, and after a year they're poorer than they were before they won the lottery. You know, these big, you know, $100,000, $1 million, those kind of things, they end up worse. So that's why you don't give more. You say, no, but it's for their benefit. No, it's not. If you want to train them and things like that, then you can give more. You know, but one should be careful. You see? At the present moment, for example, low-class men are generally paid quite amply. But instead of using their money to cultivate knowledge and advance in life, such low-class men use their extra money for wine drinking and similar sinful activities. So it should be the teacher gets more money and the plumber gets less. Yeah. Narad Muni continued. One so seriously considers one's wife to be his own that he sometimes kills himself for her or kills others, including even his parents or a spiritual master or teacher. Therefore, if one can give up his attachment to such a wife, he conquers the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never conquered by anyone. Through proper deliberation, one should give up attachment to his wife's body, because that body will ultimately be transformed into small insects, stool or ashes. That is the value. What is the value of this insignificant body? How much greater is the Supreme Being who is all-pervading, like the sky? An intelligent person should be satisfied with eating prasad, food offered to the Lord, or with performing the five different kinds of yajna, panchashuna. By such activities, one can give up attachment for the body and so-called proprietorship with reference to the body. When one is able to do this, he is firmly fixed in the position of a mahatma. So the grihastha then can do all this very nicely. Right? So it mentions the attachment to the body of the wife, because that's the aspect that's the sense gratification. Right? Because the devotional interaction, the performance of duties, the working together like that, that aspect then, you know, is that's what's done. But the point is let's say grihasthas turn into vanaprasthas. So the interaction is not based on the central feature, is not the physical platform, right? There'll be the emotional, the spiritual, the devotional, like this. So that's why gradually one has to give that up. Then one can act on that platform. Does that make sense?
Yes.
These five kinds of the different kinds of yajna, panchashuna.
The panchashuna, as we mentioned.
The same
yes, the same as in the morning. Pancha Mahayagya, Pancha Shuna. Mm-hmm. It's like that. I think there's also Rin. I think it's Rin. Means, I think, debt. Like that. It means that one owes the debts to these five groups. Mm-hmm. Like the Supreme Lord, He's created everything. Then to the Brahmins, because they get, you know, the Shastra and the sages and all that, because they give the scriptures, they've spoken the scriptures, they teach the scriptures.
Rin.
Okay.
It's not written, it's written of debts.
Yeah. Okay. So that like that, then there is then the people in general, because you know, you're living in a community, so many people are doing so many things like that, then there'll be the forefathers, because one's in a position, because they've created this thing. And not sure.
Demigods.
Demigods, because they're also controlling and making all the things work like this, like that. So I think that's where then in this one, did he mention demigods in the one Prabhupada gave, or he said the Supreme Lord? You know, he didn't mention demigods, because that's the point. Is demigods are acting on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So for general people, they'll worship demigods. For the Vaishnavas, they will worship the Supreme Lord. So that's the position of the five. Okay, worshiping the Supreme, receiving Vaishnavas and saintly persons, distributing prasad to the general public and all living entities, and offering prasad to forefathers, and offering prasad to his own self. Right? So then he has to take care of himself. That means he has to take care of everybody else before that. So you have to offer prasad to yourself, that means you can only eat if everybody else has also gotten their share, so that means you have to take care of everybody else. Otherwise, you could say, well, I'm not eating today, so I'm not taking care of anybody today. So, yeah. So that's the... Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Previously, it was said that one should attain objects only to the extent of filling the belly. Object. That means you only eat one thing at a meal, or. I would think it's to objects, right? Multiple.
Object.
Unless it's talking about two objects.
And unless it's talking about?
No, that wouldn't make sense. What I was thinking.
Or to an object, only to the extent of filling the belly. Oh, well, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, the means of doing that is explained. One should maintain oneself by the remnants of the five sacrifices arising from materials of the sky, earth, or by accident. Right? So in other words, the five sacrifices is the method to maintain yourself. What's used in those five sacrifices are materials from the sky, earth, or by accident. By accident means somebody just shows up and gives it to you. Or you're walking down the road and there's one of those, you know, bricks of gold just sitting there in the middle of the road, right? You know, like that. That kind of, that's accident.
So you should take it?
Depends upon where it is. If you just saw it fall out of somebody's pocket, no. But it basically means it just comes on its own accord. Does that make sense? The other ones, then there's some endeavor for. From the sky or from the earth, there's endeavor for those things. But from by accident, that's... You know, yeah. So it's naturally in a place where it's just like that. Srila Prabhupada adds. Right? Just like in, we were saying, I think it's in Zimbabwe or something. They want to make sure that no accidents happen. So they have barbed wire on the beaches because there's diamonds in the sand. Because previously the ocean would just wash up jewels. And because people didn't, you know, I guess the locals didn't do anything. You don't hear of Africans fishing in the ocean, so they didn't go down to the beach. So they just stayed inland. So those things were just sitting there. But then once it gets to the point that someone noticed they're there, then they put up barbed wire. So that's so no accidents will happen. Nature already has an arrangement to feed us. By the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's an arrangement for edibles for every living entity within the 8,400,000 forms of life. Eko bahunam yovi radhati kaman. Every living entity has to eat something, and in fact, the necessities for his life have already been provided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord has provided food for both the elephant and the ant. All living entities are living at the cost of the Supreme Lord, and therefore one who's intelligent should not work very hard for material comforts. Right? Lord's already providing. But the point is then, so therefore one performs one's duties for his pleasure, because he's already taking care. So that removes the idea that, no, but I need to do more things to get more money. But it's already whatever you're going to get is being provided by the Lord. So you simply have to perform your duties, and that will please the Lord. Therefore, everything keeps coming. Does that make sense? So that's why, again, outside of duties, there's nothing to do. If you go outside of that, then that's unnecessary necessities. Rather, one should save his energy for advancing in spiritual consciousness. All created things in the sky, in the air, on the land, and in the sea, belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and every living entity is provided with food. Therefore, one should not be very much anxious about economic development and unnecessarily waste time and energy with the risk of falling down in the cycle of birth and death. Right? So that's the Vedic principle. So one does, like Prabhupada says, the grihastha needs to do an occupation, but they only do how much it needs to maintain themselves. That's the idea. Because otherwise, if we get distracted, then you get distracted from spiritual life. That's the main problem. So human life is meant to end, you know, how you say, this problem. Right? Does that make sense? Problem of birth, death, old age, and disease.
So, according to the Vedic principle, then, would it be, what would you say about having a savings account?
Having a savings account.
Right,
as opposed to a current account?
Which is the same.
Swiss bank account? Or so is this offshore, onshore,
Well, if you're only supposed to have what you need to maintain yourself,
But Rupa Goswami's mentioned 1/4 is put away for emergencies.
Oh, 1/4. So it's okay then. If you let it accumulate month after month, or
if it's more than what you're going to require, then you give it in charity. But it's supposed to be there for, you know, unseen different things, emergencies, or something, some valuable work that you want to do. But it should be used in that direction. So technically it means after you've paid all the expenses, what's left, that then half of that you give away, 1/4 of that you put away, and 1/4 of that you use for whatever else you want to do. Right? Does that make sense? This isn't you are projected what you want, it's what you need. That's what Rupa Goswami's meaning. Right? Because if you go by what you need, I want, then there'll never be any extra money. But what you want, that comes out of the 1/4 of the surplus. You understand? So then it also restricts how much you get into that. Yeah. Does that make sense? So that means 1/4 of that is always saved. And then what you'd use for extra, actually 1/4 of that you should put away also.
For emergencies?
But for emergencies within just the daily kind of thing. The other one is for bigger emergencies that are, you know, unplanned. Does that make sense? you know, like natural disasters, this or that, disease, those aren't. So that's what that one quarter is for. But within the one quarter that's for, you know, one's maintenance, then a quarter of that you should be saving for just incidental things that come up that wasn't expected, or something special is there, you know, it's an opportunity, you can get it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yes?
Is that a good system to work hard, like extra time within 15 or 20 years, and then with that money for the rest of...
If you can do it, but it actually has to practically work.
It's not recommended.
Doesn't appear that from this, because then the problem is that during that 15 years, then what will happen with one's sadhana and family life? So if that doesn't develop, then what have you actually gained?
Money.
You've gained money. But at the same time, you've gained money. But at the same time, will it satisfy? You know what I'm saying? Because there's a tendency is when you're older, nothing makes you happy.
At least you get money.
Yeah. But the point is it doesn't take much to maintain. So the point is, do you want to be a grumpy old person or a actually spiritually detached old person? Mm. That's the whole point, because the grumpy old person, even though he has the money, it's never enough, and it's never this, and it's never that, and it's just that, and it's just on and on, right? And then the point is, the other one is then whatever they have is good. So that's why you put away that quarter, and then, you know, whatever, if it doesn't have to get spent on something else, you have it. Right? So. Yeah. Yes.
Why is it that a grihastha has to maintain the ashrams?
Has to maintain the other ashram.
Like optional.
It means it should be part of what he would do, but if he only has just enough to get by, because that's what the half of charity is. It's not that he has to take on the full responsibility. It means it's just like what we said. You have your occupation, you pay all the necessary bills, then what's left after that, half of that's given in charity. That's what goes to the other ashrams.
Not that he has to work more, that he can give in charity.
No, because it just comes from what you have. In other words, it's based on what you have, what you make, not on what you wish you were making.
Somebody else,
yeah, like that. So the Vedic thing is, it's by you have your nature, you perform your duty sincerely. What you get from that, depending on the Lord, that's what you work with. So let's say, just for example, every month you have 50 euros extra, you know, so 25 euros you use for something, you know, temple, or, you know, some preacher comes by, you give, or something for the brahmacharis, or, you know, you notice that there's no knobs on the shower handles in the bathroom anymore, and there hasn't been for the last 5 years, so you go down to the hardware store and buy some and put them on there, because if you give them the money, it won't go there anyway. You know, stuff like that. That's why in India, much of the time, it's like, if you have senior people, they like giving them cash. But if they have junior people, but spiritual, they like giving them goods. Like that. It's just a typical thing. Does that make sense? Like that. So then that's what you do. You know? And then that one quarter that's there, you know, out of that, you half is given is for charity, one quarter is for emergency, and one quarter is left over. And so that's the quarter that, you know, then your wife can go out and buy those new shoes that she's been looking at. Flats, come on. You know, like new set of Crocs. Yeah. You know, it's like that. Yeah, she wanted the purple ones, right? She already had the yellow ones. Now she wants the purple ones, yeah. You understand? So that's what it is. So everybody has something. right? Even if what's left over is you only have 10 euros. So 5 euros is used for that. You understand? Not sure if the wife will be so inspired with the 2.5 euros, but hey, better than nothing. You know? Get her a latte or something. You understand? So that means you're paying your regular bills. That doesn't mean you're paying the mortgage on your yacht. No, that comes out of your quarter. You understand? That's things like that. So that means really rich people should be giving an incredible amount in charity. Right? So these guys that, who is it? Some of these billionaires, they give away billions. You know, some of the guys in hundreds of millions, they give away hundreds of millions. That's the way it should be. Because then they can do so much. But everybody can give something. You know, even if it's just like that, they're feeding people. They cook something, they cook a little more. You know, feed, you know, like that. You know. Okay. Feeding the family dog. And then it also mentions the chandala, so I guess that's where Sly comes in, right? You know, so they all get it. Yeah?
You're saying like if we calculate into like when we purchase boga, buying extra boga to feed other people, then that would kind of...
That can come from this half.
That would be the charity then.
Can be. Like that, you just have to work out what works for you and the situation. You know, that's why it said the time and the place. Like if you have no one to feed, then don't cook extra. You know, do some other service. Or if you can't do anything, it's just like, let's say, for the Shudras, because they don't necessarily have lots of extra money. So, or say, like for taxing, because they don't get taxed. Shudras don't get taxed in the Vedic system. People that produce money get taxed. So the Vaishyas get taxed. Does that make sense? So you don't tax the Brahmins, you don't tax the Shudras. Kings, if you have kings under you, then yes, they may pay or may not, depending upon the situation. Like that, you know, it means you're trying to keep them in line. They may pay, you know, because they tend to, you know, make too much of trouble if they have too much money. Or, you know, they're very good, everything's prosperous, you just leave it, and then that, you know, creates more of a you know, mood of ally and things like that. But it's the Vaishyas who get taxed. So Shudras, they would work for the government one day in a month for free. That's how they would pay their tax. You know, so if he's say the guy's a plumber, he comes and does the plumbing at the White House, like that. You know, that's for free. Does that make sense? That's what they do. They do something for the government for free. So that means 12 days a year, they do that. So either one day in a month or, you know, 12 at a time, whatever it is, however it works out. You know. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. Narad Muni continued, every day one should worship the Supreme Being who is situated in everyone's heart, and on this basis one should separately worship the demigods, the saintly persons, ordinary human beings and living entities, one's forefathers and oneself. In this way, one is able to worship the Supreme Being in the core of everyone's heart. Right, because we're coming from the Lord also, so taking care of ourselves then is seeing that, but you need to see it like that. You know, it's not that you, in the morning, you know, when you get up, after you brush your teeth, you go, wow, you're looking good today. And that's worship of yourself, not like that. You know.
It's called the makeup.
Huh? It's called the makeup. That's called the makeup, yeah. Yeah. You know. Do your Atma, how you say, the worship of the Atma by going out and getting those shoes that you've always wanted, you know, you deserve.
25 years.
Yeah, 20. Yeah, not bad. Could be less. Okay. In this way, one is able to worship the Supreme Being in the core of everyone's heart. Right? So that means the core, all these different, the demigods, the human beings, the forefathers, the living entities, one seeing the super soul in everyone. That's why this activity is being done. So the Lord in that form is worshipped in this way. The Lord is everything. He's entered everything. The potency of everything is functioning from him, so it's technically non-different from him. Right? We're not talking about that he's different from that. We're talking about the part that he is everything. Therefore, being in the heart of everyone, being whatever, what we see, that is the Lord. Therefore, how would, according to Shastra, how would you deal with the Lord in that form? Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So that's what we're trying to do. That's what it, that's what's meant here. Right. So then, oneself, one's kind of, how should we be engaged in the Lord's service? How you should take care? How you should deal with that? When one is enriched with wealth and knowledge which are under his full control, and by means of which he can perform yajna or please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one must perform sacrifices, offering oblations in the fire according to the direction of the Shastras. In this way, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even if he has more wealth, it should still be used in some way for devotional service. That's the idea. Right? Then you do something big. You know, it's just like Ambarish Prabhu building the temple. Right? So that's, he's enriched with wealth and knowledge that are under his full control. So then he does performs yajna, so therefore in that way. So that's how then one does. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. One who has education and wealth must use them to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by helping the Sankirtan movement that has already begun, the Hare Krishna movement, or Krishna consciousness movement. All educated and wealthy persons must join this movement, since money and education are meant for service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If money and education are not engaged in the service of the Lord, these valuable assets must be engaged in the service of Maya. The education of so-called scientists, philosophers, and poets is now engaged in the service of Maya, and the wealth of the rich is also engaged in Maya's service. The service of Maya, however, creates a chaotic condition in the world. Creates a chaotic condition. That's it. Therefore, the wealthy man and the educated man should sacrifice their knowledge and opulence by dedicating them for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord and joining the Sankirtan movement. Because then they have the means, they can do so much. Right? But it's not necessarily they have to give it to us, they should do it themselves. You know, they either give it to those who are doing something nice and support that, or they see what's to be done and get it done themselves. Does that make sense? Narad Muni continued, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the enjoyer of sacrificial offerings. Yet although his lordship eats the oblations offered in the fire, my dear king, he is still more satisfied when nice food made of grains and ghee is offered to him through the mouths of qualified Brahmins." Footnote 19. In his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 238, paragraph 19, Srila Jiva Goswami refers to this verse when he writes, "Feeding Brahmins more auspicious, because after eating they speak. Although one is more pleasing, one shouldn't give up the other one." Yeah. So it means it's not that you stop worshiping the Lord and just feed the Brahmins. The point is why he says feeding the Brahmins is so auspicious, because after you feed them, then they talk. Right? So that's when you discuss so many nice things and stuff like that. Does that make sense? "Therefore, my dear king, first offer prasad unto the Brahmins and the demigods, and after sumptuously feeding them, you may distribute prasad to other living entities according to your ability. In this way, you will be able to worship all living entities, or, in other words, the supreme living entity within every living entity." So, according to what's being done, you're doing some general prasad distribution like that, then everybody sits down like that. But if you also have some respectable personalities or that, they're generally fed first or fed separately, because the service to render to them is going to be different from everybody else. This idea is, no, everybody's the same, feed them the same, but the service to be rendered is different. There's going to be more respect, more attention, more of these things like that. And so, therefore, you can't do that in front of everybody else. So it's either they're fed first, then everybody else, or you feed them separately and then everybody else. Right? And if you have those who can't wait for the prashad time and this and that, you know, the women, the kids, pregnant women, those who are diseased, old, like this, they get fed also separately. Not this thing, oh, they come out and start eating first and then tell everybody else to come later. No, it's just they're fed, no one knows about it. So this is etiquette. You generally see in the old houses in the kitchen, they have these small little rooms connected to it where people can take prashad. So it's like the ladies, after they've done all the work, they'll sit there and eat, or the kids will eat there, or, you know, things like that. It's not the formal place of eating. Does that make sense? Yeah. So according to your ability, right? In this way, you will be able to worship all living entities, or in other words, the supreme living entity within every living entity, right? So that's why you're worshiping all others, because the Lord's within the heart, and he's there with the jiva, which is his part and parcel. A Brahmin who is sufficiently rich must offer oblations to the forefathers during the dark moon fortnight in the latter part of the month of Bhadra. Similarly, so that means that one night, that's once a year. Similarly, he should offer oblations to the relatives of the forefathers during the Mahalaya ceremonies in the month of Ashvin. One should perform the Shraddha ceremony on the Makara Sankranti, the day when the sun begins to move north, or on the Karkata Sankranti, the day when the sun begins to move south. One should also perform this ceremony on the Mesha Sankranti day, on the Tula Sankranti day, in the yoga named Vyatipata, on the day in which three lunar titis are conjoined, during an eclipse of either the moon or the sun, on the 12th lunar day and in the Shravana nakshatra. One should perform this ceremony on the Akshaya Tritiya day, on the 9th lunar day of the bright season, on the 7th lunar day of the bright fortnight in the month of Magh, during the conjunction of the Magha nakshatra and the full moon day, and on the days when the moon is completely full, or not quite completely full. When these days are, yeah, completely full, or not quite, because sometimes it only gets to the 14th, so it doesn't get actually the 15th. Yeah. When these days are conjoined with the nakshatras from which the names of certain months are derived, one should also perform the Shraddha ceremony on the 12th lunar day, when it is in conjunction with any of the nakshatras named Anuradha, Shravana, Uttara Falguni, Uttara Shadha, or Uttara Bhadrapada. Again, one should perform this ceremony when the 11th lunar day is in the conjunction with either Uttara Falguni, Uttara Sada, or Uttara Bhadrapada. Finally, one should perform this ceremony in days conjoined with one's own birth star, Janma Nakshatra, or with Shravana Nakshatra. All these seasonal times are considered extremely auspicious for humanity. At such times, one should perform all auspicious activities, for by such activities, a human being attains success in his short duration of life. Okay. So, now do we understand what it means by devotees not worried about the rules? This is what it means. It doesn't mean what Prabhupada's give us, we don't follow that. That's rascal. That's just pure, unalloyed nonsense. He's saved us from all this and given us something very simple. And this is only part of it. These are all this is a third of a page. In Manu, it's one chapter. So this is just when it's performed, but then how it's performed, what's the place, how it's done, who you bring, it's three pages of what kind of people cannot be brought to the Shraddha rite. Three pages. Like that. So it's very, very specific. So, and that is the duty of every grihastha. So then if Krishna Prabhupada's reduced that, that is simple. Then once you go, oh no, all these rules and regulations, we're not smart as. That's Maya talking. That's not reality. Does that make sense? So this is just a taste of, people can't even figure out what day's Ekadasi. You know, it's written on their calendar, let alone all these things. You know, it means, in other words, you have to know everything. So that's why in the beginning of the yajnas and pujas and that, they have that sankalpa, so that every day you know what's the titi, what's the nakshatra, what's all these different things. So then you know, okay, this day is good for this, because then these combinations are there. Yeah? So, therefore, we should be happy. So, daivavana, it means it's accomplished by going to the root. But you can't ignore that root and then say we're devotees. Krishna makes that clear in the 11th canto. Is that you can't say you're a devotee and not follow the rules and regulations that he gave. Right? That's not how you say it. It's not cricket. Yeah? Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments, when one comes in the human form of life through natural evolution, one must then take the responsibility for further progress. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.25, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, one who worships the demigods can be promoted to their planets. Yanti Mad Yajino Pimam, and if one practices devotional service to the Lord, he goes back home, back to Godhead. In the human form of life, therefore, one is meant to act auspiciously in order to return home, back to Godhead. Devotional service, however, does not depend on material conditions. Of course, for those who are engaged in fruitive activities on the material platform, the times and seasons mentioned above are extremely congenial. Right? So for us, every day is good for devotional service every time. So we don't have to worry about this. Because the point is you're either engaged nicely in devotional service or you're doing this. The Malecha lifestyle is not an alternative. That's why people go to hell. Right? Means a grihastha has to do all this. But if he's a devotee, then he just engages in the Lord's service by worshiping him, then everybody's taken care of. That's the whole point. So this thing is one's a grihastha but not very serious about Krishna consciousness or really care because, you know, we chant, we don't care for the rules. That's bogus. So Narad Muni's making it here is that all the four orders are for Krishna consciousness. They're for elevating oneself. That's the whole point. There's no excuse. So when people say, oh, we don't care for rules, do they even know what rules are? Right? Do they even know what rules are? This is rules that Narad Muni just gave. That's rules. And he's just giving the times. He's not telling, like I said, he's not telling the places, who's invited, what you cook. It's even the whole thing, and what you cook depends on how much benefit they'll get. So how it's served, who's serving it, how they're dressed, discussions, the qualification, means what they do after they eat, means the person who eats the Shraddha offering, then I think until the next morning at sunrise, he's considered connected with that Shraddha rite. So if he does any nonsense in that time, then the forefathers go to hell. So it's very, very strict. So to find such a Brahmin, such an anxiety. So that means you need to have such Brahmins. How do you have such Brahmins? People, therefore, those who can focus just on spiritual life, you have to support them. Otherwise, you don't have Brahmins to do this stuff. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, the whole thing works nicely. But if one just is serving Krishna, then that's it. But it has to be, as Prabhupada said, ahekuti apratihata. It should be without desire for karma gan. It should be pure devotional service. Right? One can't profess mixed devotional service is good enough. We don't need anything else. Right? That's not good. Yes.
Like for the Shraddha ceremony, when we invite a Brahman, that Brahman, if he is very pure, then he will not be affected by the karmas, you know, of the person who has passed away.
Means he'll get affected by it, but it means then that through his sadhana it'll go away. But that's why also then, generally a Brahman only does Shraddhas for someone of the same community.
Mm-hmm. But what about in devotee community then?
Then you pick and choose. Because the point is their parents devotees?
No.
Then? And if they're doing that, they're willing to do that, how's the dakshin going? You know what I'm saying? Because for most people, it's that we fed you, that's the dakshin. You know? We gave you benefit by inviting you over here and feeding you. I've had that once. they told me to, you know, come to Bombay for a program like that. I said, so will you arrange the ticket? No, no, you just arrange it, and whatever it is, we'll pay for it and all that. The only thing available, because they before they could do stuff, because they knew before it's happening, they could arrange to get cheap tickets. I could only get something. There were nothing available. I could only get, I think, Air India. You know, so that's going to be more expensive because they work on international rates. So it cost me, you know, I say, like seven times or something what it is. So then we get there and this and that. And then in their mind is that the money they would have given me in Dakshin already went into the ticket. So I'm already taken care of. I'm good. Right? So the point is when you do these, it has to be done properly. It can't be miserly or this or that. So you want to do this, there is a whole lot of nonsense there, then there should be more happening. Right? The king, he, you know, became so sinful by taking on the karma of the citizens that he turned black. So they took that and put it into a solid gold big deity. And then any Brahmin who would come in, they could come, they would take the karma, but they would get the deity. You know what I'm saying? So this whole thing is, oh, we're devotees, it doesn't matter. Then your devotees just chant Hare Krishna, be happy. You know what I'm saying? Don't try to, you know, how you say, what's the one going on? But you want to eat the cake and you want to keep the cake?
Yeah.
You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that when it comes to these things, then they want to work on those material things, then you pay. You put out money. You put out facility. You offer respect. But we want to do it just as cheap as possible. So then, it's not that it's a matter we don't have money. I'm talking about the situation. I'm talking about the miserly mentality. Not about that they don't have money. If somebody doesn't have money, that's fine. Brahmins, because it says, Brahmins work should do it for nothing. So they'll get anything or not, because the point is they do whatever they do, they'll walk away with the benefit of that. And according to what's done, them, you give a proper dakshin, you get the benefit. So if you give less, they keep part of the benefit of the yajna. You know what I'm saying? You don't give them a dakshin, they get the whole benefit. You give half of what you should have given, then they get half the benefit of the yajna. You only get half. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah. So, in other words, you deal with the material aspects, then the rules for the material aspects apply. And if you want to deal in the devotional, then that's there. But the point is yes, they take on the karma of whoever it is. That's why it says only those who are very pure can do it. And the point is those who are very pure may not want to do it. So that's why how many devotees are maintaining qualified grihastha brahmins? I know so many that have to go out and get jobs because no one takes care of them. Right? So then they go for the brahmacharis and that, well, it's not their business. You know, because it's the cheap option. But, you know. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Chaitanya Gaura Prabhu ki.